And the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Hey, Merry Meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. My guest tonight is Phoenix LaFay, and we're going to be talking about her new book, What is Remembered Lives. Now, Phoenix is a professional reader, root worker, teacher, and ritualist, and she's been practicing witchcraft for nearly 25 years, and her teachings are connected to the reclaiming tradition. She's the owner of the esoteric goddess shop called Milk and Honey, and co-authors a blog called The Witches Next Door. As usual, if you have any questions or comments for Phoenix, please send me a private message in the Para-X chat room. And if you want to join us here, come on over to paraxradionetwork.com. So Phoenix, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
You know, I really, before we get into the book, I'd like to find out a little bit more about the reclaiming tradition. That's something I've never heard about, and it's a curiosity to me.
Oh, sure. So the reclaiming tradition started in the San Francisco Bay Area back in the late 60s and early 70s. It was fueled by the Anderson fairy tradition and feminist Wicca and basically the feminist movement. A lot of folks who are familiar with reclaiming think that Starhawk is sort of our leader. And many folks are familiar with Starhawk, who wrote The Spiral Dance. But Starhawk is one of several people who were the mothers of this tradition and gave birth to this tradition. And it started by feminist meetings and learning about witchcraft and learning about the Iron Pentacle, which comes from the Anderson fairy tradition, and also a huge amount of activism. A lot of the protests that were happening in the San Francisco Bay Area had a whole pagan cluster. And a lot of the pagan cluster became reclaiming witches, you know, however 40, 50, year, however many years later we are now. So, you know, it started as a group of women teaching each other, and it grew and grew and became a tradition. And now there are witch camps associated with the reclaiming tradition that happen all over the world. There are different communities that are all over the world that are reclaiming communities, and each one's a little bit different. So although it was born here in the Bay Area of California, that each community that has a really strong presence is a little bit different. We're anarchists at heart, so
that's
so
good.
A lot of our practice is fueled by that. Absolutely.
we need some incentive. I mean, everybody needs incentive, so it's good that you have it. Into the book now. I like your explanation about where the book title, What is Remembered Lives, comes from, and it bears repeating. So would you mind enlightening those who may not know what that phrase comes from or means?
Absolutely. So, and the reclaiming tradition, at Samhain we honor our beloved dead, and one of the things we say when someone passes on is, what is remembered lives? So that is sort of the impetus, right? What we remember continues. What we give energy to has life. And in my personal practice, the more I started to work with entities and energies beyond my ancestors, looking at the fae and spirits of the land and deities, you know, the multitude of spirits that exist in the world, I started really looking at, what if it's not just our ancestors that need to be remembered? what if the gods really do need us to remember them and honor them and give them offerings? And I don't mean to say that, you know, humans hold all the power and they won't survive without us. I feel it might, you know, my personal practice tells me they'll be just fine without us. But it's keeping their stories and their myths and their energy awake and effective. Mm-hmm. And part of our culture. And the more we remember them and talk about them, the stronger they are.
Well, and that's interesting, too, because I've seen different sayings, you know, all along, and mm-hmm. a lot of them say, if you mention their names, they are still here, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So it kind of falls into right. falls into place, right? All right. Yeah. Now, you're a polytheist, meaning that you believe yeah. there are many gods and goddesses as well as other entities. And you say, like a croissant, there are many layers to our worlds and theirs. Now, I always say that it's like right. an onion. So we're both, you know, we're both talking about layers. Mine just stink a little bit more than yours. But, you know, whatever we compare the layers to, those layers are connected to each other. And mm-hmm. you write and say that they also influence each other. Now, how do the layers influence each other?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's subtle. So if you don't have a practice with working with spirits or entities you can't see, then this might take a minute to really fully grok. But mm-hmm. for folks who do work with spirits or entities, what I'm about to say, well, you'll be like, yeah, obviously, that's, you know, no big deal. Things happen. We see things out of the corner of our eyes. We get information that doesn't quite make sense to our logical brain. Something moves or is shifted in your house. Your keys disappear. Your glasses disappear. You get that job that you were praying to your gods for. And these are things that are influenced by other realms. Our ancestors, our gods, the fae. They all can impact our realm, but how intense that impact is depends on a lot of factors. Like if you live in a part of the world where you're on a ley line, you know, there's, especially in England, they believe a lot in the ley lines. And mm-hmm. you can go to lots of sacred sites and they'll say, oh, this is a very intense energy portal here. We have those in the United States and they're all over the world. But if you live near one or you understand those energies, it's easier to connect to the other realms. The further away you are, the energy gets a little denser unless you start intentionally working with those energies or opening those portals or making it easier for your spirits to communicate with you. I'm not blessed with seeing full-on apparitions. That's not a skill that I possess at this point in life. Mm-hmm. But I do get vibes or energies or hits. Sometimes I can't explain it other than like, oh, I'm just getting a hit. I'm getting hit yeah. about something. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's those other realms bleeding through into ours.
I got a quick question from the chat room talking about the reclaiming tradition. She's wondering if there's a reclaiming branch along the East Coast that you know of.
Yes. Yes, there is. There is a community in Vermont. Vermont Witch Camp happens this year, all because of our current life situation and the pandemic, all witch camps are on hold. Nothing is happening this year. But there is a camp in Vermont. There's also Spiral Heart Witch Camp, which is in Pennsylvania. And there is a pretty thriving community of reclaiming witches in Washington, D.C. So there's for sure folks on the East Coast. If you're further south than that, I don't know for sure, but there's definitely in the more northern realms, there's quite a few witches. Pittsburgh has a pretty big community too.
So if somebody were to Google to find them, they could do that, you think?
Yeah. If you go to reclaiming.org, I believe it's been a while since I've checked out the website, but at one point in time, there was like a directory to all the communities that were actively offering rituals and workshops and things like that. So it's definitely worth checking out if you're curious, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously somebody yeah. is, so maybe it's going to start spreading,
right,
which is good. Okay. Peeling back another layer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. All right, so the book explains how we can interact with the spirits that we sense around us, meaning loved ones, ancestors, deities, and the fae, which allows us to reach out beyond the mundane world and commune with other realms of existence. Now, I'm willing to bet that there's at least one listener saying to themselves right now, well, why would anybody want to do that? So how would you answer that question?
Yeah, I like that. There's definitely no requirement for this. You know, you do not have to believe in spirits or entities in order to be a witch or a pagan. You know, your mileage may vary and your personal praxis is more important than anything else. However, sometimes we get stuck. Sometimes we get lost. Sometimes we hit a wall. Sometimes we want to achieve something and we don't know how to get there. And that is where spiritual relationship can really be a huge boon. You know, spiritual relationship with entities can give you information that you might not be able to access on your own. And also, I feel on a larger scale, a lot, and I, you know, this is a tricky statement here, because a lot of witches and pagans, at least that I know, are very connected to the land and to being outdoors and to nature. But our culture of humanity, especially in Western countries, we've kind of lost our connection to nature. And I feel like, especially with ancestors and the fae and spirits of the land, we really need that reconnection. I think part of our cultural malaise or cultural problem is this disconnection. And when we connect back into the land, it awakens those relationships with fae, with entities we might not see with our regular seeing eyes. And there are gods and goddesses of the natural world that could really use our help in saving this planet if we want to continue to live here. So it's twofold. One is personal, is very personal, and it's about your growth and your achievements and your development as a spiritual human. And the other part of it is our reconnection to the mystery of the world, our reconnection to nature. And when we work with entities that are not human and that may not be seen by our human eyes, it reinvigorates mystery. It reignites our mystery. And it opens us up to something greater than ourselves.
And that's important. I mean, people, a lot of people live in the black and the white, and they don't jump into the gray, but that's where all the good stuff is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, you explained that there are two ways to interact with the unseen realms, by invitation and by realm travel. So I think the first thing that popped up into my head is realm travel close to astral travel in nature.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah, and I think...
How does it work?
I think that's a little more advanced as well. I mentioned this a few times throughout the book, to be real cautious when deciding you're going to travel. Don't just give something trust at surface level. You know, you wouldn't get in an unmarked van with no windows with strangers you don't know. So consider that a really good, reference when traveling into other realms as well. If you don't go to a neighborhood where you don't know what the neighborhood's like. Going into other realms is a lot like astral travel. And in some traditions, especially some indigenous traditions, they look at that world tree, and the trunk of the tree is very much our realm, the human realm. And if you go into the roots of the tree, it's very much the ancestral realm and the deep. If you go into the branches, it's very much the realm of spirits and the gods. And so sometimes I think of it that way, and I don't go into a lot of that world tree imagery in the book, but that's kind of an easy way to think about it, looking at all of these realms as different points on the tree. And a lot of astral travel you often go to a tree or a doorway to access these realms. It's setting a course, making a map, having an intention, and kind of, you know, the third star to the right and straight on till morning, like Peter Pan.
That works. And you make a really good point in the book about the importance of learning the histories of these deities and these people that we want to engage with. You know, you'd say read their stories, find out as much as you can before engaging with the spiritual entities. And I think that's important because, as you said, just about going in realm travel, some people would think the name Pukwudgie was really cute and would like to engage with one and cuddle it. Well, you need to know that some of those cute little entities, aside from Pukwudgies, are and as well as human spirits, have both physically and mentally brought harm to the uninformed. So, you know, whether you're traveling or whether you're trying to get in touch with the different realms and the different spirits, I mean, you really have to know your stuff. And, you know, people think, okay, well, maybe elementals are scary or maybe some of those other things are scary, but human spirits aren't scary. And I've always said that when a human passes into spirit, they don't gain a halo and wings, and they're not very angelic. Mm-hmm. They're the same people that were there when they were here on the planet. Some are good, some weren't so good. And again, that goes for all the entities and the deities. Now, suppose somebody wanted to just kind of say, okay, I'm a beginner. I don't know who I want to connect with. How does that work? I mean, do you explain that maybe people have a certain affinity to certain things or, you know, go ahead and explain that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many ways. There's so many ways. And I think, yes, people definitely have affinities for certain things. Jess is a beautiful opposition to that, you might have a real repulsion to certain things, and there might be some power in that for you. You know, there might be a deity that scares the bejesus out of you, and that might be an interesting thing to explore too, right? So, listening to that inner wisdom and that inner guidance and seeing what's curious, what's your ancestral background, what are the countries of origin of your ancestors. Those are some places to start, especially working with deity. It can just give you information. And I don't necessarily believe that you can only connect to deities of your ancestral lineage. I think that's untrue. But I think you do need to understand the ancestral lineage of any deity you work with. That is important to approach them with reverence and respect. So, you know, are you a healer? Are you a massage therapist? Do you want to connect more into that healing energy? Google gods of healing, you know, and you'll get a list of a ridiculous amount of deities, right? Mm-hmm. And scroll through those lists and see, don't even read any details. Is there a name that pops out? There's a great book by Patricia Moynihan, The Encyclopedia of Goddesses. Flip through it and let it fall open to a page and read about it. You know, back in the 90s when I started learning about all of this stuff, it was really a hot button that you needed a patroness or a patron god. And so I felt this pressure to find the perfect god that was going to be the one that I worked with. And I don't go with that anymore. I feel like deities come and go. There are five gods that I work with on a daily basis. They're all from different pantheons, all from different parts of the world. It works for me. There are other gods that I have interesting relationships with, but they're not necessarily like my beloveds, you know, but I know them. We have a good relationship, but we're just acquaintances. We hang out occasionally, you know? Yeah. And I think there's so much room and space to find relationships that work. And it's also, you can also approach it a little bit like speed dating, you know, read about a goddess, see, are you curious to learn more about this goddess? Then maybe you go on a trance and visit this goddess in trance, or maybe you make an offering to this goddess and see if something develops. And just open the door a crack. And after a little exploration, you or they might be like, nah, you know what? This isn't what I needed or wanted. Thank you. And I'm going to move on. It's okay to not have a relationship too.
Well, I was just, when you were saying that, I was thinking that some people might say, well, they're trying to begin a relationship, for example.
Yeah.
And they do make contact. But as you said, at some point they decide that just isn't the right person for them. And maybe mm-hmm. some people are afraid that if they do that, that particular deity or entity is going to get mad at them and seek revenge. And maybe mm-hmm. here and there they might, but generally, mm-hmm. Is it kind of like copacetic? Well, okay, we just don't mix and, you know, go our own way. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, will some just say, okay, you brought me here, now try and get rid of me kind of thing. And that could happen.
Yeah. Absolutely, that can happen. I think it's more likely that they're an entity, especially a deity. An ancestor is unlikely to go, okay, bye. They're going to hang out anyway. How much they interact with you depends. But yeah, there are some entities that are jealous. There are some entities that will have a hard time. And there are some, like, I have a student who didn't realize it. Once we started working together, she realized that Hecate had been basically following her whole life. And she didn't realize it was Hecate until much later on. But she could look back and go, oh my God, it's been Hecate this whole time.
Yeah.
And she was not interested. She was quite scared of the energy of Hecate. Mm-hmm. But as she started to learn more about her and open up to her and recognize the kismet, the fate that was their relationship, she became much more comfortable with it. And it actually brought her so much power and so much joy. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes gods do show up and they have a reason for wanting to work with us. And we might not want that. We might not want that at all. And some of them will be more persistent than others. You are always able to say no. You are always able to shut the door. You are always able to not be interested. But sometimes our spirits know better, and they might pursue you. And so you really have to look at the reasons for that.
And one of the reasons that could be in general are maybe there are some deities and entities that aren't called upon very often, but are mm-hmm. needing it, wanting it. And they'll mm-hmm. get close to somebody and you know, kind of court them in a sense, whether, you know, that somebody yeah. knows it or not. And they would be probably really happy that somebody did finally acknowledge them. But then if they broke it, it's, you know, like some person on a date who never gets dates, and he finally gets a date, and the one person, oh my God, I love this woman or man, and all of a sudden they walk away from you, and then it's like, oh, yeah. You know, I mean, you kind of have to feel sorry, yeah. And I'm sure everybody sometimes goes after, especially deities, the ones that we know well, you know, like Hecate and, mm-hmm. and several others, or Caridwen or whatever, but there mm-hmm. are lesser ones that people don't necessarily know too much about. And I think that's where we start to talk again about learning and studying, because yes. you just can't, it's not a bullseye thing. You can't throw a dart. Well, you could, but know what you're getting into before you throw that dart. And, you know, if you want to have a dartboard, pick 5 or 6 deities that sound good to you and put them on the dartboard. And then you can choose right. from them. But also, you know, it's just like witchcraft. Learn your craft, know your craft. Don't yeah. just jump yeah. in, because you can do more harm than good.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I don't think yeah, people really
learning
that.
Their. I agree. I really agree. And I think especially with the, you know, with goddesses and gods that are known really well, you know, in California, we learn about the Greek gods in elementary school, mm-hmm. right? And yep. some Egyptian and a little bit Egyptian too. It's part of the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
But there are thousands of deities that we never learn their names, we never hear them. I've been studying this stuff for almost 30 years, and I still come across deities where I'm like, wow, I've never heard of that deity before. How wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And the more obscure, the less their stories are told, you know, the yeah. more obscure or small or from a culture that doesn't talk about their ancient polytheist roots or what have you. They're going to be more excited. But they also could be a lot more slow. You know, I've found folks who work with like the Afro-Caribbean gods, those gods have a lineage that's never died. They've been worshipped for thousands of years unbroken. Same with the Hindu gods.
Mm-hmm.
They come really fast when you call them. But the gods who do have a broken lineage, they're kind of a little bit slower to show up. And when they do show up, it's important to honor them for showing up.
Do you think that they're shy in showing up? Maybe they don't have as much, I don't want to say faith in themselves, but, you know, for having been in the background more than others, you know, maybe they're afraid to stick their toe in the water too, because they just don't know what they're going to get because they're not used to being called upon or even acknowledged, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's totally a possibility. I don't even pretend to know how their thought processes are, because it's way beyond my silly human brain. But, you know, I think it's also energy, right? If Ganesha is being brought offerings and has huge temples built to him, and every day people are going to Ganesha and honoring him and praising him and giving him offerings, he's got a lot more energy to expend than Alicia, this Greek goddess of healing, who not very many people know of. There are no temples erected to her, and you know, she doesn't have as much energy to move through. She doesn't have as much energy to use. She doesn't have the reserves, you know, looking at it from an energetic perspective,
right.
Which is why when we do develop relationships with deities, it is important to give offerings and to sing their songs and write them poems and burn them incense. That fuels their energy. That gives them power.
Yeah, not everybody has muscle memory or any kind of something similar to muscle memory if you don't have muscles. Okay, I've got a chat room question, and so I'm going to ask before we go to break. And they want to know if realm travel is safe for beginners.
That's a really good question. I think one of the things in the book that I talk about is having a place of power. So creating your own safe place on the astral is a good way to start. That way you can always go to that place first and then branch out from there. And once you have a really firm place for realm travel, it's safe to go, because you always know your way back home. You always know the way back to your personal place of power. And engaging with spirits or inviting spirits to your place of power is safe because it's yours. You know, nothing can come in that means you harm. Nothing, even if you invite something in, if it means you harm, it can't come in. And so I think that's a safe way for beginners to do it. And in the book, there is a whole exercise on setting up your place of power and creating it on the other realms and starting to work with it.
Yeah, I've got that in my notes to talk about, because, you know, a lot of people don't think they have power. You know, it's like in speaking to a spirit, a human spirit, they think, well, you know, I'm being haunted, or that ghost is after me, or oh my God, blah, blah, blah. And they don't realize, you know, that if you turn around and say, this is my area, my space, you leave, you have that power to do it. We all have free will.
Absolutely.
And so I think, you know, it's important for people to realize that they do have a place of power, that they can have a little say in their lives and who they associate with, no matter what realm they're in, you know. And so, so maybe we'll talk about that a little bit later. But we're going to a break right now. And when we come back, I want to ask Phoenix about negotiating with spirits that we contact. So stay put, everybody, and we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Stirring the Cauldron will be right back, so don't go away.
If you end up with webbed feet,
remember, you've been warned.
For almost 2 decades, Midnight Syndicate has composed the soundtrack to your darkest nightmares. Imaginations of fans worldwide have been fueled by its gothic, horror, and fantasy symphonic albums. A staple of the haunted house and amusement park industry, for many, the music of Midnight Syndicate is the music of Halloween. Now, Midnight Syndicate will bring your nightmares to life in a spectacle of sound from beyond the grave.
You've no doubt heard of Tango and Cash, and perhaps It Takes Two to Tango. But starting on May 7th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, you will be listening to a new show on the Para-X Radio Network called Tango and Friends with your host, Bruce Tango. And yes, there will be at least two to tango on each episode, sometimes even more. For example, his guest will be the stars of the hit TV show on the Travel Channel, Ghost Nation, Steve Gonsalve, and one more tango, Dave Tango. So mark your calendars. That's May 7th at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hi, we're back, and my guest tonight is Phoenix LaFay, and we're talking about her new book, What is Remembered Lives? And as I mentioned before the break, I want to hear more about negotiating with spirits, that we try to contact. So where does one begin this negotiation?
Yeah, I mean, first is understanding what your personal boundaries are. And this is, negotiating with spirits is a lot like negotiating with humans. And, you know, if you have a healthy relationship with a partner or with kids or parents, you have boundaries. Boundaries are important. So it's good to know what is acceptable for you. If you're comfortable having spirits visit you in dreams, then that's a boundary. You are welcome to visit me in my dreams. If you are comfortable with spirits taking a form and showing up in your living room, then that's a boundary to know. That would freak me the heck out if the spirit just showed up in a body in my living room. So that's a boundary for me. I need warning before my friends show up. I don't like surprise visitors, uninvited guests. I like to know we have a date.
Yes.
So it's good to know what your personal boundaries are. And then it's about developing relationship. You go on a date with a human being and you don't move in after the end of that date. You talk about whether you want to see each other again, and you set up a time to have another date, and you decide what you're going to do on that date. And things unfold in a way that feels natural for that relationship. And that is really the same thing in negotiating with any other entity. Is you move slow. You let things open naturally. You make negotiations along the way. If something happens that is uncomfortable or triggering for you, then you back off and you make space to have that conversation with your spirit, with your friend, with your ally, and let them know, actually, that dream was not okay. I can't have you bring me information like that because I can't receive it. And it is totally okay to say no. It's totally okay to say that this is scary. This is too hard. This is pushing my boundaries further than I'm ready to push them, because most of the time, our spirit allies want us to grow and develop as spiritual beings. And so they will test us and they will push our buttons, and they're doing it in a way to help us grow. Sometimes they forget that being a human has a lot of limits. Human bodies have limits. Mm-hmm. We require food and water and sleep. And sometimes they don't need those things, so they forget sometimes. And so reminding them, I need food and water and sleep. And it's pretty rare that an entity or a spirit is going to push you to a place where you're unable to sleep, or you're constantly being, your dreams are being invaded. That's pretty rare. Mm-hmm. But just know that you are allowed to create boundaries and to say no, and to let your relationship unfold just like a human relationship.
Slowly. Baby steps, right?
So, yeah. 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 And, in my opinion, slow is better, because you mm-hmm. don't want to jump into something. You don't want to move in after two dates and then be like, oh crap, this is so not what I thought it was going to be 6 months down the road. Let things move slow. And that's so hard for us modern folks, especially people who are new to the craft. I'm 42. So I don't want to sound like judgmental here, but especially for younger folks who are so used to immediate gratification, you know, and mm-hmm. when you can go on a computer and type in a thing into Google and immediately not only get an answer, but where to buy it, you know, we're used to that as a culture. And a lot of young folks have never had any experience different than that. But with this type of work, with connecting with the spirits, with connecting with other realms, instant gratification isn't always good or healthy. You want things to be slower. You want things to open slowly. It's not a check mark on a box that says, okay, I'm a witch now, I can do this thing. Or, okay, I'm an official pagan now, I have a god. Let it be slow. Enjoy the moments as it unfolds, and it'll be a much healthier relationship.
Yeah. And I mean, that's just almost common sense, even though we're not talking about something mm-hmm. particularly common, but it is common sense. I've got a question for the chat from the chat room, and she wants to know if you realm travel to other world lines and timelines, like realms where history unfolds differently.
Mm-hmm. That is definitely a possibility. It's not, it's something I've done, but it's not a regular part of my practice. And I do know folks who that's a huge part of their practice. So that's absolutely a thing you can do. But again, that's, you know, pretty advanced travel. You want to mm-hmm. have a real good firm understanding of just this timeline and this now and the realms that are connected to us right now before starting to venture out into the past or the future or alternate timelines. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some of us have trouble even getting through to astral travel. So anything, mm-hmm. anything beyond that, no, that would never happen. Well, not to me anyway.
Yeah. It's not easy. It's astral travel is take some practice.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and some people, like with anything, some people are better at certain things than others. And so, you know, I may never get an EVP with the spirit, and I may not be the greatest astral traveler, but I've got my points, my good points too. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's the way we all are. And some people get really down because they can't do things. Never get down because you can't. I mean, if you try and you try with intent and with good intentions and it doesn't work for you, you just weren't supposed to. It doesn't mean that you failed. And I think people, you know, are all saying, oh my God, I just can't do that. I'm just so dumb. And no, it's not that. You were brought here to do certain things and, you know, maybe that wasn't one of them.
Mm-hmm. So there, and that's another beautiful thing about being in community as well. If you're blessed to have people around you, you might not be good at one thing and a coven mate might be. And that's, you know, a way of collaborating and working together. We don't have to be good at all the things. We shouldn't be good at all the things.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. Like, you know, I can't sew, but I have a friend that can. So if I need something, mm-hmm. you know, or if she needs something that I can do that she can't, I mean, yes, it's important to have that network or that networking around you. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So I was reading your chapter on ritual basics, and I realized that while I know about chakras, here comes mm-hmm. one of my duh things, I didn't have a clue about the three internal cauldrons that are part of every human body. And, you know, with a show like Stirring the Cauldron, maybe I should have known. But explain it, please. What are they and how do they work?
This comes from an ancient Irish manuscript. They're called the Cauldrons of Poesy, and it is an old poem. And many folks who are practitioners in Irish lineages feel that there's like some physical chakra-like, to use the word chakra because it's, you know, a word most of us are familiar with, energy centers in the human body that's likely the ancient Irish and Celtic systems were working with. I've heard them called different names. So the names that I was taught are the names I always use. So that's what I'll share with you now. But I do know that they have slightly different names. But the first cauldron is in our belly. It's the pelvic bowl. So it's that bowl, that cauldron that holds all our guts, basically. And that's the cauldron of warming. And it's connected, if you think of the chakras and how they work in our bodies, the first three chakras, the root chakra, the sacral chakra, and the solar plexus chakra, they're kind of held here by the cauldron of warming. So all of those things that those chakras are connected to, relationships and sex and our security and stability and our willpower, all of that is in that cauldron of warming. And if you think of a woman's body as well, with the uterus in there, that everything gets warmed up and that's where blood flows and all of that amazingness, right? The cauldron of warming.
Yeah.
And then in our heart is the second cauldron, and this cauldron's actually tipped over. It pours out into the world, and this is the cauldron of vocation. This is how we connect to other people, and this is the heart chakra and the throat chakra are part of this cauldron. Think about the energy that those chakras are connected to. If you are familiar with the chakras, it's mm-hmm. love, it's communication, it's how we interact with the world and other people. And that's that cauldron there that pours out, and it needs constant refilling because it's always pouring out. Mm-hmm. And then the third cauldron is it's our skull. It's on the top of our head, and it faces downward, and it actually is a spiritual practice to try and turn that cauldron upward so that you can receive divine inspiration. You can receive in what some Celtic systems is called awen, mm-hmm. that spark of inspiration.
Right.
And that's the cauldron of wisdom. That's the cauldron that connects us to the gods, to our God self. And the chakras that are associated with that are the third eye and the crown chakra, which, makes sense. It's all about vision and connection and the higher self. And so you can work with these cauldrons. They all have their own very unique to you. They'll be colored and shaped and made out of a material that's very unique to you. The brew and how viscous it is or what color it is will be very unique to you. So you can actually do a journey or a exercise to connect to your three cauldrons and find out what they look like and what color they are and what the brew looks like. And as you work with them more and more, you can even in the morning wake up and do some physical movement to connect into them. I find this is a weird overlap that's weird, but Tai Chi and the cauldrons work really well together, just slow movement to connect into how your energy centers are feeling. And you can see, how is my brew? Is my cauldron full today? Do I need to do something to take care of my cauldron of vocation? Do I need some love today? Is my cauldron of warming a little bit cold? Do I maybe need to fill my chakras? Do I need a little bit of self-care today? Do I need a little bit of passion today? And you can really use them as a diagnostic tool to see where you might be off or where you may need some attention.
And do you clear them like you would clear your chakras? Do you clear the cauldrons every so often?
It's a little bit different than clearing the chakras. It's a similar concept, but I find like the language and the visualization doesn't exactly overlay. It's more about filling up, right? Filling up the brew, filling up the container. So it's a similar idea as clearing your chakras, but it's kind of the language is just a little bit different.
Okay. And you mentioned exercises. Do you have an exercise in the book that pertains to the cauldrons? Because you have so many, and I was going to get into that in a while, but yeah.
I do. There's a brief cauldrons exercise. It does not go in depth into it, but there's been... if you look up the cauldrons of Posey, you'll find some both historical and modern information. And if Morgan Daimler, who is a pretty prolific pagan writer, she's written about them several times. So that's a good source too. If you're interested and curious, I highly recommend. Yeah.
That's good. So I also never heard, oh God, this is, makes me sound like such a stupid person, but uninformed person. I had never heard of an aura wipe down, which is, basically an aura cleanse. I mean, we as a human race, not just witches, all need to do that every so often, I would say. So I'd like you to explain how someone would go about that.
Yeah. So one of the, in the reclaiming tradition, we have four core classes that are sort of the foundation of reclaiming witchcraft. And often in one or all of the classes, we'll do an aura car wash. And it's very fun, but it does require more than one person. It's not easy to do for yourself. You do need a little bit of a group of people. But, you know, the concept is our auras collect gunk. They collect dirt. They get funky or stale or have tears or holes or what have you. And taking some time to spruce that up and clean it out and give it a little fluff can really help your well-being, both spiritual and mental and emotional and physical. It works on all the levels. It's great. But an aura wipe down is just it's a moment of focusing on your aura. And if you do a generic wipe down, you can do that on your own. You don't necessarily have to have a buddy. But if you do have a buddy or two or three, it is a really lovely exercise to do with a group of people. And it's very pampering. You, as the person getting wiped down, get to stand or sit in the center and have other people go through your aura and comb out any tangles, pull out any dark spots, shine up anything that needs some shining up, maybe even do a little patchwork if there's any rips or holes or tears. And so it requires, you know, you to be pampered and let other people help your aura. And it gives the people doing the cleanse or the wipe down the opportunity to really engage in their higher senses, to feel for where you may need some attention. But it's, you know, it's using the idea of a car wash or a good bath and a lovely hair brushing, using that imagery as a way of cleaning and clearing your aura.
All right. So somebody from chat room just said, well, do I need to be able to see my own aura, or if I'm helping someone else cleanse theirs, I don't know, I've never seen an aura kind of thing. So what do we do?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Nope. I have seen an aura like maybe half a dozen times, and there are tricks to seeing them, right? But you don't need to see it at all, because really it's about sensing. And our talking about chakras again, the palms of our hands actually are energy centers. They have chakras in them. And you can wake those up, shake your hands around, clap your hands, rub them together, and just push against your own hands, and you'll start to feel a bit of resistance. That's energy. That is your own aura, pushing against your own aura. So you can wake that energy up. The more you play with it and practice with it, the easier it gets to feel it. And then you just slowly engage with another person's aura. So you move slow, because especially if this is new, you don't want to just bum rush someone's aura. It's good manners to move slow, but just move slow towards their body and wait until you feel the resistance of their aura. And then use your hands as a scanning device and see where am I feeling like they need a little brush? Where am I feeling like they need a little energy sent to them? Where am I feeling like they need a little fluffing up? And just trust your instincts. And if it feels silly, then you're doing it right. A lot of witchcraft is kind of acting weird and silly and just going with it and trusting your instincts. And that's a lot about sensing energy. If you can't see it, you just have to trust your senses in other ways.
Yeah, it doesn't mean it's not there. And I mean, it's kind of akin to Reiki. And it also has a lot to do with intent. If you intend to be able to do something, you don't have to see it to do it, to accomplish it. You have to have faith in yourself and know that it's going to happen. I mean, it's very much witchcrafty. So, and you don't have to be a witch to do any of this either. So, you know, we're all human and we can. All right.
That's right.
So, I'm trying to get everything in record time. So section one of the book is devotion. That includes things like working with deity, deities of mystery, of magic, and a lot more. Section two is about, what did I say? Section one is not devotion. It's working with deity. Section two is devotion. getting ahead of myself. And that includes ancestors, the beloved dead, the mighty dead, all kinds of stuff. Section three mm-hmm. is connection with the deities. And section four is putting it into practice. And so it takes you step by step as you go. And each of these sections have a lot of chapters, and they're very interesting. And they'll catch your eye, you know, just in general. So, you know, you mm-hmm. just take those steps. And there's just tons of good information. And as I mentioned before, the book includes tons also of exercises and rituals. Now, rituals may be more for witches, pagans, whatever. But exercises are just about for everybody. You know, when people think they see a book like this, they think, oh, I've got to be a witch. Oh, I've got to be this. I've got to be that. No, you don't. And I've said this before, too, that people that do these exercises that might seem a little witchy to you does not mean that you're going to turn into one. There's no hocus pocus or abracadabra. You're doing it to make yourself feel better. So, that's kind of where we're going with that. All right. I want to, before time runs out too much, I want to find out more about your shop, Milk and Honey. So tell me.
Yeah. So I have a shop in a little town called Sebastopol in Northern California. And it's a sweet little goddess shop. It's actually been in the community since 1996. It's been mine for 5 years, but it's been a staple in our community for a very long time. And we are dedicated to the goddess and introducing people to the goddess in all her various forms. And, you know, we have candles and stones and statues and books and all of the lovely things that you might find in a witchy shop. And we also offer classes and workshops, although not right now. My county is still on lockdown, so there's not a whole lot going on inside the shop. But we are doing things online and having our classes moved online, and our tarot readings are online. So we're doing our best, but typically we do lots of fun things in the shop, and there's lots of beautiful things to explore in the shop.
And the shop is online as well, right?
Yes. Yeah. milk-and-honey.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I went around nosing on your website this afternoon, and I'm going to do that. And there's a whole lot of good stuff going on there. So if people pop over, what can they expect to find in general?
Yeah, you know, I typically teach a lot. I teach a lot in my local community, but I also travel a lot. And I teach at witch camps and pagan events and conventions. And, you know, again, this year's a little weird. Mm-hmm. But I always have a list of the fun things that I have the blessed pleasure of being able to go to. And I offer candle services, and I do tarot readings. And I have another book coming out in July called Walking in Beauty. And it's about, you know, connecting to that mystery, like I talked about before, reconnecting to the world. So, you know, I'm pretty busy with lots of fun witchy stuff, and I like sharing it with other people.
And I got busy looking at all the things too. So, and I'm glad you mentioned a new book, because now I have another excuse to have you back after July or before July. Yeah, that works really well. I like it when people do that. And then sometimes I'm thinking when I say that, they go, oh, I shouldn't have said that.
No, that would be fun. I love it.
Yeah. So, and I was going to ask just really briefly about the candle services, because that was mm-hmm. something that everybody would kind of like. So what does that entail?
Yeah, so I offer a candle ministry, and it basically I do glass encased candles, and I will design it and decorate it and fill it with herbs and oils for your specific goal. Or the desire that you're trying to manifest. And then I burn it, obviously. And after it's done burning, I send a candle report, which tells you how it burned and if there's any divination signs on the glass that you might want to know about, any interesting things that may have happened while the candle was burning. And that's my candle service. And then we also have a community altar at the shop. So I do charge money for my candle services, but I also offer prayer and candles at our community altar for people where money is not as easily flowing, which is something that is very prevalent right now. So yes. I do try to make sure that I can reach everyone, whether that is feasible financially or not.
Oh, well, I'm in love with these candle services. So, yeah, I hope everybody,
yeah,
their ears perked up too, because I'm thinking, wow, this is something I've never heard that's being done, and that's amazing. All right, what's amazing is, again, no time anymore. So please give out your website address so people can go have a look at the thing for themselves and find you, actually.
Yeah, I'm at phoenixlefay.com, and that's Lefay is spelled LEFAE.com. And then again, you know, Milk and Honey in Sebastopol, California. And I'm on Papios Pagan, the witches next door. So yeah, there's lots of places to connect with me. I also am on Facebook, Phoenix Lefay, on Facebook. So, you know, please do reach out, send me a friend request. And I love chatting with people about this stuff. It's my favorite thing in the world. So I'm always happy to have a chat.
Well, good. And we will chat sometime when the next book is out. So be prepared. And I want to thank you for being with us tonight. I mean, it's very interesting, a lot of fun, and I learned a couple of things. So yeah, you can teach an old hag new tricks, or an old crone, whatever. And I want to thank everybody for listening in as well. And so until next time, everybody, blessed be, and merry meet again. Good night.
The circle be open, not unbroken. May the peace of the goddess be ever.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited.